20th chapter of the book of John. John chapter 20. And as we do from time to time, I'd like to focus attention upon one particular individual that's spoken of in this chapter, and perhaps draw some lessons I hope that will be of benefit to each of us. We're going to talk tonight about the woman that I suspect many have heard of, a woman who was a very close disciple of Jesus's, and plays a pretty pivotal role in many of the accounts that the Gospels provide for us of Jesus's earthly life. It's the woman identified in Scriptures as Mary Magdalene. She is the first to see the resurrected Lord. She is one who had been possessed by demons, seven, in fact, and the Lord had cast those demons out of her. And she is identified in these gospel accounts as one who was a very, very close associate of Jesus. You know, I think sometimes we maybe lose sight of the fact that of those people that were in that circle of disciples who followed Jesus, he had close relationships. We'd probably refer to them as friendships with some of the disciples that he didn't have with others. That's just part of human nature. For when a group of people are together, that within that group, some are going to be closer to others than they are to others in the group. You know, John talks about the disciple that Jesus loved. Well, I thought he loved all of them. Well, of course he did. But he is referring to a special relationship, a special closeness that he had with one of his disciples. And sometimes, I think brethren sometimes are a bit unfair to one another, as though this kind of closeness can't develop between them within a group. I just know that sometimes I've heard brethren talk about, well, you know, so-and-so, they're just friends with so-and-so, and they're not friends like that with me. Well, wow. You know? Yeah, welcome to the human race. People get close to others while not being as close to someone else. Doesn't mean they don't have love for all of their brethren. Doesn't mean that they mistreat their brethren. Doesn't mean that they are something less towards their all of their brethren that they ought to be. Just means they're human. And I think we see that depicted in the life of Jesus, as he lived as a human being among us. And it seems that that was partly true of this woman, Mary Magdalene, that she had appears to be a closer relationship with Jesus than many of the others. But in John the 20th chapter, we read about Jesus' appearance after his resurrection. His appearance, first of all, to Mary. And I'd like for us to read the first 18 verses of this chapter, and then take a few moments in our study to take note of two or three things that are revealed in this passage as they relate to Mary and what is said about her. So if you would, please start with me in verse 1 of John chapter 20, where we're told that now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. And so she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Peter, therefore, went forth, and the other disciple, and they were going to the tomb. And the two were running together, and the other disciple ran ahead faster than Peter, and he came to the tomb first. And stooping and looking in, he saw the linen wrappings lying there, But he did not go in. Simon Peter, therefore, also came following him and entered the tomb, and he beheld the linen wrappings lying there, and the face cloth which had been on his head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then entered in, therefore, the other disciple also, who had first come to the tomb, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. So the disciples went away again to their own homes. But Mary was standing outside the tomb weeping, and so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. And she beheld two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been laid. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and beheld Jesus standing there, and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, and my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came, announcing to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and that he said these things to her. Well, it's a very poignant story about this encounter of Jesus with this good disciple of his. And the first thing that I want you to notice with me is that she was asked, "Why are you weeping?" She's asked this two times. First by the angels that she saw within the tomb of Jesus after Peter and the other disciple had come and seen the empty tomb and they had left. And she stood there by the side of the tomb weeping and stooped them to look in. And she saw these two angels. And they ask her the question, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And then in verse 15, she's asked again this question, asked by Jesus this time, though she does not know it is Jesus who asks the question. Her answer is essentially the same to both of these questions. And that is, the body of her Lord has been taken, and she doesn't know where it has been taken. And she even asks, in the case of responding to Jesus, taking him to be the gardener, she even asks, "Tell me where his body is, and I will go and take care of him." And we might ask a question sometimes, why didn't she recognize Jesus when he asked the question in verse 15? You know, in Luke, the 24th chapter, we read of another of the resurrection appearances of Jesus to two of his disciples. And you'll perhaps remember this. One was named Cleopas. The second one we don't know the name of. But they were traveling on the road from Jerusalem to Emmaus. And Jesus appears to them. And Luke tells us that he did not reveal himself to them. He kept his identity from them. How he did it, I don't know. But it's not until later on in their discussions that Jesus allows them to see and to understand that this is him. Is this what happens with Mary? Perhaps so. I'm not sure, but I don't think that it's necessarily that Jesus was keeping her from seeing who he was. It may very well be that it's just the result of her great grief. She's weeping. her mind is focused upon where the body of her Lord is. She's confused. She's certainly not expecting to see him. She may not have even paid much attention to that figure that was standing there that asked her the second time, "Why are you weeping?" She may have just seen, just taken a glance and saw him there. I heard this afternoon, one of the football games that was on, a story that I think kind of illustrates how this could have been the case. It's a story about a coach of the Minnesota Vikings, Brad Childress, who has a son serving in the Marines stationed in Afghanistan. And Childress had the opportunity to travel to that part of the world on a USO tour with a couple of other NFL coaches. And he was hoping to be able to see his son, but the places that they were going were, as it turned out, were not going to be where his son was stationed. And so he dismissed from his mind the fact that he was going to be able to see his son. In fact, he called his wife to tell her that he wasn't going to be able to see their son. Well, they flew into some location, I forget where it was, and he got off the plane, and there, of course, were several military personnel to greet him, and he was going through his routine as he would meet someone, as he did on this tour going from place to place. He would shake hands with the person. He would say, "How do you do? I'm Brad Childress, coach of the Minnesota Vikings," and then just go on with some pleasantries, you know. And he was doing this after they had landed at this particular site, and he reached out and he shook hands with one soldier and he said, "How do you do? I'm Brad Childress, coach of the Minnesota Vikings. I'm glad to be here to meet you." And before he could go on with any more pleasantries, he heard a familiar voice say, "Oh, really?" And it was his son. Now here's a man who was standing arm's length away from his own son, who was admittedly probably dressed in a way that he wasn't expecting, perhaps. Been several months since he had seen his son. But he wasn't expecting to see him there, and yet here he was standing almost face to face, and he didn't recognize his own boy. Because he really wasn't looking for him. And not until he heard that familiar voice did it sink in who this was. So it may very well be that was the case with Mary. Not expecting to see her living Lord, she's trying to find his dead body. She wants to know, where has he been taken? Her eyes probably clouded with tears. Until she hears that familiar voice, "Mary." And then she realized to whom she was speaking. But now I want you to think about something with me based on this. I want you to think of how it's true that, you know, the answer to things we are searching for, the answer to problems, the answer to concerns, oftentimes the answers that we're searching for are often very near to us, and we just don't know it. What she was looking for was standing right there, near to her, and she didn't realize it initially. I want to tell you something. There are answers to what you may be struggling with, to solutions and to the problems that you may be dealing with. Answers are near. They're as near as opening this book and listening to what God has said. But I want to tell you something else. The Jesus that was near to Mary is near to you. Oh, there's so many different passages of scriptures that encourage us and remind us. For instance, in the book of Hebrews, where he says, "I will not desert you. I will not abandon you." I won't leave you. The Lord is not far from us. Paul the Apostle, in speaking to the men of Athens, says in Acts the 17th chapter, as he talks to them about the God that they were ignorant of. Oh, they had many gods. They had idols all over the city. He said, but I want to talk to you about the God that you do not know. And he goes on in the midst of his sermon to say that he is not far from any one of us. The answers that you may be struggling to find are not far, because your God is not far from you. He's near to us. But now I want you to also think with me of another statement that's made in this event. In the 17th verse, we find where after Jesus speaks to Mary and she realizes who this is, he says to her, "Stop clinging to me." And he goes on to say, "I've not ascended to the Father yet." And there are a variety of explanations for this. I know one common view that some take is that he was saying, "Don't touch me." That, you know, he was somehow in a state where he it was almost as if it would have defiled him. He hadn't yet ascended back to his Father, and he needed to keep this purity. He needed this detachment. I'm reasonably sure that's not at all what he was saying. Because the fact of the matter is, the Lord spent some 40 days between his resurrection and his ascension into heaven. And the Scriptures describe to us his interaction with his disciples, in which he not only allowed them, but he invited them to touch him. You remember the encounter with Thomas, the apostle, who had said, "I'm not going to believe he's raised from the dead until I can see him and I can feel the wounds that he suffered in the crucifixion." And when Jesus then appeared again to his apostles, and Thomas was in the crowd, and Jesus told him to come and to feel the imprints of the nails that had been driven into his body, and to feel the wound of the spear in his side. In addition to that, John the Apostle, in writing his epistles, says in 1 John chapter 1, and in verse 1, beginning to talk about his encounters with Jesus, he describes it in this way. He says, "That which our eyes beheld and our hands handled." We touched this risen Lord. That was part of the evidence, John says, of the fact that he had been raised. So I'm reasonably sure that Jesus was not saying to Mary, "Don't cling to me," because he didn't want to be defiled somehow, or he didn't want human contact until he had ascended to the Father. I'm inclined to think more that what Jesus was dealing with was perhaps an emotion in Mary. Put yourself in her position. After coming to realize who this is now, what did she do? I kind of get the picture in my mind. She ran up and hugged him. She grabbed hold of him and did so in a way as though, "I'm never going to let you go. Don't leave us again." You remember how much time Jesus spent in preparing his disciples for the fact that he was going to die? Matthew the 16th chapter, that great proclamation Peter made to the question, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter said, "Well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And then from that point on, Matthew tells us, Jesus began to tell his apostles about how he was going into Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the chief priests and the Pharisees, and that he would die. He spent time preparing, even before that, preparing them for the fact he was going to die. He was going to leave them. I just think Mary's just trying to say, "No, don't go away again. We want you here. We want things, now that you're back from the dead, we want things to go on like they were. And the fact of the matter was, they were not going to go on like they had been. And Jesus actually sets out to prepare his disciples once again for the fact that he was going to leave. As I said before, it was going to happen in about 40 days. He was going to depart. Turn your Bibles, if you would, to the book of John in the 14th chapter. And in the 14th chapter, begin reading in verse 28 with me, where he says, now this is before his crucifixion, but he says in verse 28, you heard that I said to you, I go away and I will come to you. If you loved me, you would have rejoiced because I go to the Father. For the Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it comes to pass, that when it comes to pass, you may believe. Turn over to the 16th chapter in verses 6 and 7. There he says to his apostles, but because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your hearts. But I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper shall not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. When Jesus talks about the Helper here, as you read John 14 and John 16, he's talking about the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, that he promised the apostles would come and be a comforter to them as he had been after he left. He says, this is to your advantage. It's for your good that this is going to happen. So he spoke to his disciples about the fact that not only he was going to die and he was going to be raised from the dead, but he spoke to them as well about the fact that after that he was going to leave. And it was for their good that this would come about. But Mary didn't want this to happen. She wanted things to return to normal, to the way they had been before. But the fact is that what Jesus was saying to them all along, and I believe what he's saying to her again here, is that there are bigger concerns. It's really going to be to the advantage of all. And I just believe this is probably a good lesson to us, that it's best for the Lord to complete his plan and not conform his plans to ours. His plan all along was die, be raised, and be ascended back to the Father. And it was his plan to do that because that was in the scheme of redeeming mankind and providing a better future for man beyond this life. Let me ask you a question. Do you really want Jesus to stay there with Mary and not go on through with all that God planned? Do you really want him to stay with those disciples so things could go along like they had been going for the previous 3 years, so they would be happy until they died? Then what? Well, Jesus gets a circle of people around him, and he just repeats that over and over again, and it comes right up to your time and my time, and maybe you get fortunate and you get to be in that circle of friends up until the time that you die. Then what? Do you really want Jesus to stay here, or do you want him to go back to his Father as was planned all along, so that you can go and be with him forever? There are bigger concerns. There are bigger concerns in what God has planned than what you and I have planned. And we need to be very careful that we don't try and make God conform to the way we want things to be rather than the way he wants them to be. And the third thing that we see happening in this encounter is in verse 15, where it is said that supposing him to be the gardener, Mary goes on and asks about where is the body. Look in verse 15. I think it's an interesting phrasing. She says to him in the latter part of verse 15, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." You get what she's saying to this gardener? If you've moved the body, please tell me where it is, and I will go and I will get the body and I will take care of it. And that's when that momentous word was spoken. Mary. And then it began to sink in. This is no gardener. This is who I'm looking for. This is the Lord that I'm searching for. You know, it's interesting that Jesus did talk about taking care of tombs during his lifetime, during his earthly life. Over in John, the 5th chapter, and in verse 25, he says to his audience, "Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear shall live. For just as the Father has life in himself, even so he gave to the Son also to have life in himself. And he gave him authority to execute judgment, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, those who did good deeds to the resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to the resurrection of judgment." Jesus is going to take care of tombs. You know what he's going to do with them? He's going to make them obsolete. He's going to make it so they're not needed anymore. There's an hour coming, he says, when all will hear my voice and they will come forth. They will come forth to judgment. If their deeds have been evil, they will come forth to reward if their deeds have been good. Isn't it touching that Jesus calls Mary by name and she realizes who he is? One day he's going to call her again. He's going to call every single person who lies within a tomb, and they're going to rise up. It's ironic that when she thought she was talking to a gardener, she said, "Tell me where he is, and I will take care of him." And Jesus, when he calls dead bodies from tombs, is going to take care of those bodies. He's going to conform the bodies, Philippians 3 tells us, he's going to conform the bodies of the righteous to the glory of his own body. You're going to have a new body, raised up. And if your deeds have been good, if you've been a disciple, a faithful follower of the Lord, you're going to be given a resurrection body, 1 Corinthians 15 describes. Probably most of what we know about that body we will receive. It doesn't answer all of the questions, but it gives us enough to know that it's going to be a glorious experience. But those raised up having done evil deeds will be raised up as well to judgment, to give answer to the Lord for their misdeeds in this life. The point we need to see is this, that Jesus is himself going to care for us. We'll turn around one day, like Mary did, and we'll see him for who he truly is. But on that day, Philippians 2, verses 10 and 11 tells us, on that day, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. And I take that to mean those that are raised even to judgment, to condemnation, before meeting their eternal destiny, will acknowledge who this was, the Son of God. And those who are raised to reward will likewise proclaim it again, this is the Son of God. And like Mary, we'll see him for who he truly is. It's a great encounter that happens between these two friends. And it has momentous implications and great lessons for you and for me. Do you believe him to be what Mary came to realize, the resurrected Son of God? By his resurrection, demonstrating